Welcome to Midday, everybody. I'm Sheila Cast. I'm very glad you've joined us today. Fascinating topic. We're talking today about the health benefits of fasting. Intermittent fasting, alternating periods of fasting with periods of normal eating, is getting a lot of press lately. Celebrities have endorsed it. Benedict Cumberbatch, Jimmy Kimmel. But fad diets come and go, and they tend to be questionable. Remember the tapeworm diet? This time around, however, the scientific evidence is promising. Some research in animals indicates that intermittent fasting has the potential to improve health and reduce the risk of chronic diseases. There's also evidence that it may prolong life and boost brain power, and maybe it helps us lose weight. According to fasting proponents, this all makes evolutionary sense. Early humans were not regularly chowing down on three meals a day plus snacks. Fasting advocates argue that our bodies have evolved to undergo periods of deprivation. But deprivation is not easy, as anyone who's ever attempted to diet knows. The prospect of foregoing food altogether for 16, 24, or even 36 hours is daunting to many of us. Plus, the research on intermittent fasting doesn't square with conventional wisdom. We have all been told time and again that breakfast is the most important meal of the day, for instance. What are the benefits of intermittent fasting? How does the body respond? Is intermittent fasting really doable for regular people, or is this for those select few who happen to have an iron will? Two guests have joined me in the studio today to talk about intermittent fasting. Mark Madsen is chief of the Laboratory of Neurosciences at the National Institute on Aging. He's a neuroscience professor at Johns Hopkins University and a leading expert on intermittent fasting. Welcome to Midday.
It's nice to be here, Sheila.
It's nice to have you. And Steve Mount is also with us. He is a molecular geneticist at the University of Maryland. He doesn't study fasting, but he practices it. For the last dozen years, Steve Mount has abstained from food 3 days a week. Welcome to the show.
Good to be here.
So, Mark Madsen, let me start with you. What drew you first to this line of research?
As you mentioned, I'm a neuroscientist, and because aging is the major risk factor for Alzheimer's disease, Parkinson's disease, and stroke, back in the 1990s, we were asking the question, if we modify the aging process or subject animals in our animal models of these age-related neurodegenerative disorders to interventions that are known to increase lifespan in the animals, will that have an impact on the disease process in these animal models? And we found that if we maintain rats or mice on diets where every other day they fasted for 24 hours, so alternate day fasting, nerve cells in their brain were more resistant to dysfunction and degeneration in these animal models of age-related brain diseases.
So your initial interest was about aging and about the brain.
That's for you is the big draw.
It wasn't about losing weight per se.
No, because I'm a neuroscientist at the Aging Institute, mm-hmm. and so we're interested in brain aging. So that's what our initial focus was on. But later in our conversation, we can talk about the human studies we've done looking at general health effects of intermittent fasting in various human subject population.
Your initial findings that fasting, well, you already knew that laboratory animals lived longer with less calories.
Right. And with alternate day fasting, they can live up to 30% longer.
So it's not just reducing the calories, it's actually going long periods without putting calories
yes,
in.
Yes, we think that the fasting has benefits for the brain and other organ systems that go beyond what's obtained with calorie restriction. In fact, in some of our animals, when we do alternate day fasting, their overall food intake is not reduced very much, only 5 to 10%. And yet we see quite striking benefits for their brain and other health indicators.
So these experimental animals are not restricted. When they're allowed to eat, they are allowed to eat what
right.
they want?
That's right. And so on the days they have food, they generally eat more. They always eat more than they normally would to partially make up for.
But they don't make it up calorie for calorie.
Not quite.
So, Steve Mann, I don't want you to feel like a laboratory animal, but I am fascinated by the fact that you have been doing this. You've been fasting, I understand, on Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Saturdays for the last 12 years. Why? It sounds drastic.
Well, okay, so as a geneticist, I've known for a long time about caloric restriction and its effect on longevity and also the length during which animals are healthy and vigorous. And so he published, Mark Mattson published the paper, or Anson et al., in 2003, saying that alternate day fasting had the same effects. And I thought, well, I can do that. So I just gave it a try.
Wait, hold on a minute. Before we get into that thought, oh, I can do that, he said, about the idea of skipping food every other day or almost every other day. Why was that so obvious to you that you could do that? It sounds hard.
I guess I intuited, and it turned out to be true, that, you know, if you don't eat for a day, you know, you can get used to that. But then you can eat as much as you want on the other day. So there's no ongoing prolonged hunger. You know, that's what I think caloric restriction amounts to. And that doesn't sound pleasant. It doesn't sound like something I could do.
Huh. But, so I interrupted you. You were saying you thought, I can do this.
I can do that. So I tried it. And one thing I noticed within about 2 weeks is the sort of short-term hunger, you know, where you feel like, I really just got to eat, your stomach is rumbling, that just disappears. And I think it's in a kind of accommodation that the body makes. And then what you might call longer-term hunger, which is, you know, that you are perhaps going to eat more, you're enjoying your food more, that, you know, that's there, that's normal. And so on days when I'm not fasting, I do eat more. But also I think, you know, I'm hungrier. I mean, I'm enjoying the food more. And
so that's actually a benefit. Turns out to be a benefit, is that when you can eat, you're relishing it more.
Yes, I think where the willpower comes in is actually not so much on fast days, because it's actually very easy. If it's Tuesday, I'm not eating. You know, it's very simple. But then when you eat again, you know, there is a tendency to just overeat, and I have to be careful of that.
That is Steve Mount with us here on Midday on WYPR. I'm Sheila Kass. Steve Mount is a practitioner of alternate day fasting, and we're talking today on Midday about intermittent fasting. One of the experts of the world on that topic is with us, Mark Mattson, chief of laboratory neurosciences at the National Institute of Aging, who studies this. And you can join this conversation. What does this sound like to you? Does it make sense to you that it would be doable for you to skip food every other day? Does the idea intrigue you? Do you have some experience with it? If so, share your experience with us. Give us a call at 410-662-8780 or send us an email at midday@wypr.org. Mark Mattson, you also practice what you study.
Yeah.
But I don't have any idea how you do it. Is it every other day?
No. What I do is usually 5 days a week, Monday through Friday, I don't eat breakfast or lunch. And then I work out in mid-afternoon, and then I eat after that, and then I eat when I get home in the evening. So essentially on those days, I'm going about 18 hours with no food and then exercise. And one of the critical, we think, physiological changes that occur with fasting for periods of, say, even 12, 16, certainly 24 hours, is during that time period, you deplete all the energy source in your liver, which is called glycogen, which is a source of glucose that's released into the blood. And then what happens, then your next source of energy is fat. And so when you fast, even for these relatively short time periods, you're starting to burn fat. And some of those fats are converted to what are called ketones. And as a neuroscientist, I've known for years that ketones are good for the brain. They're an energy source that substitutes for glucose. And the reason this occurs is, think of your animal in the wild, say a carnivore, and haven't been able to find prey for 3 or 4 days, and you've completely depleted the energy in your liver, And so you're running essentially on ketones. And literally, when you have to run to track down your prey, you're running on ketones. And turns out that ketones do many good things for the brain. They're an energy source for the neurons, which use a lot of energy. But we're also finding they have signaling functions. They have alerting functions to increase neural network activity in the brain and make the brain more active. Because in that situation, from an evolutionary perspective, when you haven't gotten food for a long time, it's very important your brain be functioning optimally, or you're not going to be able to figure out how to obtain food.
And our brains function better on if we're powered by ketones than if we're powered by glycogen?
And if we're powered by glucose.
Glucose.
Yeah.
So let me turn to you, Steve Mount, and ask, on the days that you're fasting, I could hypothesize that without fresh fuel in your body, you're kind of thinking slower and kind of lethargic. What's it like?
So it's perfectly normal. I feel fine. I think this is something which took a couple weeks after I got used to fasting. Then it started to feel just the same on fast days as non-fast days.
So it's not that you feel more focused, but you don't feel less focused.
Right. I mean, I don't particularly notice. I mean, I'm not aware if it's a fast day or not. And I fast from dinner to dinner, so it's about 24 hours. This year I've been teaching a class from 4 to 6 in the afternoon on my fast day, so I haven't been eating for almost 24 hours, and it's fine. I mean, I have to ask the students to be sure, but I think the lectures are
because
just as good.
I'm sure that there must be listeners who are thinking, wait a minute, my mom always told me don't skip meals and especially don't skip breakfast. And you guys are saying exactly the opposite. You're saying it's just fine to skip breakfast. It's a good thing, actually. Steve, you just said you fast from dinner to dinner, so you skip breakfast and lunch. So why have we been told most of our lives to eat three meals a day, eat breakfast, what is it, eat breakfast like a king and lunch like a prince and dinner like a beggar?
Well, the three meals a day is a cultural, I guess you could say it's an aspect of cultural evolution that when the agricultural revolution came and people were start able to grow food and constantly have food available, the farmers were, three meals a day made a lot of sense based on their lifestyle. They get up in the morning, eat breakfast, then they work hard and they expended a lot of energy, so they needed the calories. Then they take a break in the middle of the day, you know, talk about what they're doing, eat some more, and then at the end of the day, eat. And also the social aspect of, you know, eating together, I think led to that. From the scientific standpoint, there's really not any convincing evidence that it's more healthy to eat a lot of small meals than one or two big meals, or even, you know, what Steve's doing, you know, three days a week going 24 hours without food. And now that the studies are being done, it's clear in animals that intermittent fasting is beneficial for their health. And if they're eating, regularly, they're actually in suboptimal health.
I want to pick up on some of that, but we need to take a short break here. We're going to continue to talk about intermittent fasting when we come back, and we'll take your calls. Do you fast? If you skip a meal, do you find yourself making up for it at the next meal, or is that food that you consistently forego? Give us a call at 410-662-8780 or email us at midday@wypr.org. I'm Sheila Cast. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Midday, everybody. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking today about intermittent or periodic fasting, alternating periods of fasting with periods of normal eating. My guests are Steve Mount. He's a molecular geneticist at the University of Maryland. He does not study fasting, but he practices it for the last 12 years. He's been abstaining from food 3 days a week. And also with us is Mark Madsen, chief of the Laboratory of Neurosciences at the National Institute on Aging. He's also a neuroscience professor at Johns Hopkins University. He's an expert on intermittent fasting. I want to pick up on something that you mentioned, Mark, but I actually want to ask Steve about it, and that was the social aspect of this. I would think there are a lot of people who are perhaps listening and trying this idea on for size and hearing you say that you didn't find it that hard to start doing it, but they're thinking, but I have business lunches, or I love getting together, you know, for coffee with my friends in the morning, coffee and a donut with my friends in the morning. So how does it work for you in terms of the social aspect?
That's a good question. So for me, I think I'm very flexible about it. So if there's a social event where I think it would be awkward to not eat, I'll go ahead and eat. And then I'll shift the days around. Since I fast 3 days a week, I can change which days I fast, or just fast 2 days that week.
So if there's a family gathering on Saturday night, Saturday is not your fast day that
Thursday is normally a fast day. Thanksgiving, you know, I'm not going to fast Thanksgiving. I mean, this is, I'm flexible about it. What I do is very similar to the sort of 5-2 fast, which has been very popular, become very popular. They fast 2 days a week. So I certainly don't, there's not a lot of evidence that this is actually going to help me. So I'm sure that 3 days versus 2 days is not going to make a big difference. And I'm just flexible. I also switched. I used to fast on Monday, Wednesday, Friday. Now I fast Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday. And I switched because there's a group that regularly meets for lunch on Mondays. And for a while, I was just going and sitting there and, you know, having tea or whatever. But then I...
But it sounds like as you're doing the shifting, you're still pretty focused on making sure you get 3 days of fasting from dinner to dinner every week.
I there have been weeks. And when I go on vacation, I sometimes stop altogether. Last time I did that, I was with my wife and we were at the Grand Canyon. We actually ended up doing something like what Mark describes because, you know, we just go out and it wasn't convenient to get lunch. So we just pretty much ate one meal a day.
Okay. And listeners, if you've got questions or ideas about intermittent fasting, if you've tried it and have an experience to share, you can send us an email at midday@wypr.org or phone us at 410-662-8780. Holly has phoned us from Baltimore. Holly, welcome to Midday.
Thank you very much for your program. My mother has had Parkinson's for, just about 5 years, and I'm wondering about the possible studies on the efficacy of doing this with people who already have it, and also you can imagine some of the problems with getting helping somebody to sort of go along with the program if they ever are having cognitive disabilities or challenges. Thank you very much,
Holly. Thank you for the questions, Mark.
There's no studies that would address the question of whether someone who's already symptomatic with Parkinson's disease will benefit from intermittent fasting. In the animal studies we've done, we subjected the animals to intermittent fasting early on before they were symptomatic and before they had neuronal degeneration in their brains. And there we saw beneficial effects in delaying the onset of the disease process. What is known, though, for Parkinson's disease is exercise, regular exercise, does help. That's very clear now from the human research studies that have been done. So I'd encourage you to have your, did you say her father?
Her mother.
Her mother exercise as much as possible, or at least, you know, regularly every day, keep physically active. And it turns out that some of the same, what we call pathways or signaling mechanisms, whereby intermittent fasting benefits the brain. Exercise is the same. So in theory, it's possible that intermittent fasting could help. But the studies just haven't been done in Parkinson's disease.
But you mentioned earlier, Mark, you mentioned humans. So we started out talking about animal studies, and you mentioned there are human studies, too, about the effect of intermittent fasting.
So what's been done in humans so far, there's been many trials of intermittent fasting in human subjects that are overweight. We've done a study, for example, in collaboration with Dr. Michelle Harvey in England, in Manchester, who works with women at risk for breast cancer because of their family history and their overweight. And we randomly assigned 100 women to either a diet where they count calories every meal and eat 25% less calories but eat three meals, or fast 2 days a week. It was a six-month study, and we found that the women who fasted 2 days a week lost more belly fat and had greater improvement in glucose regulation compared to the women who had a 25% daily reduction in calories. And that's now called the 5-2 diet, which actually Steve mentioned.
So the 5-2 diet is
2 days a week fasting.
Fasting 2 days a week, eating normally 5 days a week, and that's enough to show effects.
Highly significant weight loss in these women, and particularly belly fat, because during those two fasting days, they're, as I mentioned, they're mobilizing the fats and producing ketones. And actually, we measured ketones in their blood and hormones to show that they were complying with the diets. There's also been, we did a study in asthma patients who, again, were overweight and found that alternate day fasting, which is a little harder to do, but we got these women to, or these subjects to do this, over a two-month period, their asthma symptoms improved greatly, and in their blood samples, markers of inflammation were greatly reduced. Not immediately, but within 2 weeks to a month, highly significant reduction in inflammation. So the fasting has an anti-inflammatory effect, which, as you know, many diseases involve inflammation, particularly age-related diseases.
That is Mark Madsen here on Midday on WYPR. He is chief of the Laboratory of Neurosciences at the National Institute on Aging. He's a neuroscience professor at Johns Hopkins University, and we're talking about intermittent fasting. Also with us is Steve Mount, who has practiced intermittent fasting for a dozen years. You can be part of this conversation. You can call us at 410-662-8780 or email us at midday@wypr.org. We got an email from Patrick who asks, can you please discuss the benefits or drawbacks of intermittent fasting for diabetics?
All we can say there is that the animal studies in animal models of diabetes, there's highly beneficial effects of intermittent fasting. In human subjects, to my knowledge, there's been no randomized controlled trial of intermittent fasting in subjects with diabetes. However, the many studies that have been done in obese subjects who are at risk for diabetes, they had a highly significant improvement in what we call insulin sensitivity, which is essentially saying there's anti-diabetic effects in subjects who are at risk for diabetes.
So, and those are human studies, you're saying. So we know that from human studies.
And if someone has type 2 diabetes, any diet they can get on that will allow them to lose weight is going to benefit their glucose regulation. You know, so combination of reducing energy intake, whether through intermittent fasting or calorie restriction, plus exercise, those are the two diet and lifestyle changes that can clearly have a beneficial impact on subjects with type 2 diabetes.
Angela has called us from Baltimore. Angela, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. My question is in regards to individuals who have kind of complicated medical histories. I have had two transplants, a pancreas and a kidney transplant. I'm under doctor's care. Everything has been really great for the last 10 years. But I'm also a personal trainer, a group fitness instructor, and I'm in really good shape. So I guess I'm not the typical transplant recipient, but I'm wondering how this would affect someone like me who I have studied the calorie restriction method, and I'm very concerned about longevity, and that's really why I started looking into that. I'm wondering if this would help with someone like me who is kind of atypical.
Angela, I appreciate the question. I suspect this is obviously something you need to talk to your doctor about, but let me turn to Mark Mattson and see if he has.
Well, it sounds like whatever she's doing now is good. She's in good shape and physically fit and probably has a relatively low body fat, I would assume. And so the answer is we don't know if and to what extent she might benefit from incorporating intermittent fasting on top of what she's already doing. All we can say is that it will help people lose belly fat and improve their glucose regulation. But if they're already fit and
Angela, thank you for the call. Is intermittent fasting something that again, if you've got a reason to check with your doctor after you've checked with your doctor, that it makes sense to sort of experiment with? I mean, do you get the effects soon enough, and do you adapt soon enough that you could do it for a few weeks and without causing yourself much trouble?
It's very important to consider the analogy with exercise, I think, because fasting and exercise have many overlapping effects on beneficial effects on organ systems. So, for example, if you've been sedentary and want to start an exercise program, you start out slow and build up to it. So for fasting, what one would want to do is start out maybe one day a week, eat only one meal. You know, do that for a month. Then go to 2 days a week or, you know, something like that. So you can ease yourself into it and get used to it and see how you're feeling. You can also monitor various aspects of your health. Body weight's an obvious one. But many people now are actually, you know, doing blood work and...
Oh, really?
Yeah. And, you know, looking at their lipids and glucose levels, insulin and so on, and you can get clear indicators of whether these health indicators are improving in any individual.
Let me say one thing about diabetes. I mean, well, two things, I guess. One is that there's a lot of interest in this, and Michael Mosley, who's the author of the 5-2 book, has a new book which is specifically for type 2 diabetes. So he's recommending it, primarily because weight loss will help.
Michael Mosley is the...
author of the 5-2 diet.
He's in the UK.
Right.
He also did a BBC documentary. So his new book is...
I forget what it's called.
But it's about...
It's
specifically
for,
about
for
diabetes.
Type 2 diabetes. But the other thing I think we should say is that in general, it's not a good idea to do radical things without talking to a doctor. And in particular, anyone taking insulin should not fast.
Anyone taking insulin should not fast.
That's right, because your sensitivity can change, and you could potentially have a potentially lethal.
Result. That's a clear bright line. Farouk is calling us from Catonsville. Farouk, welcome to the show.
Yeah, good afternoon, Sheila. This is Farouk Marfani, and I talked to you a long time ago, but this is a very, very good topic. Just let you know that I'm Muslim. And we are going to go fast in the month of Ramadan after 2 weeks. But in our religion, our prophet says that fast Monday and Thursday. Now I understand when the science proved that why he told us 1,500 years ago to fast 2 days, Monday and Thursday. My mom used to fast. My wife used to fast. A lot of friends are fasting Monday and Thursday. So this is like a... Well, you can say religious medicine, you know, without knowing why we are doing it. Plus, it was prescribed, do not fast on holidays. Like after fasting, we have a celebration, Eid, Ramadan Eid, or one another Eid, we call a festival. Don't fast on those days. So the people are eating, you enjoy. But this is look like a it like now is giving me a more reasoning, you know, why in my religion this is prescribed. And now science is proving that if you fast, if you miss a couple of days, but if you don't fast 24 hours, we just fast 15, 16 hours, dawn to dusk. So I'm glad that you brought this subject, and if people are listening, it will help and also, you know, improve their knowledge.
Farouk, I appreciate you bringing us this perspective. I imagine both of you have heard from people and have figured out on your own how this ties into philosophy and religion down through the ages. Mm-hmm. Steve, you're nodding. I mean, do you often find that when people talk to you about your practice of fasting that they tie it in
Yes, they do. And also, you know, there are, I think it's the Seventh-day Adventists who routinely fast once a week, and the Mormons. So there are groups that include many people today who fast regularly.
We need to take another quick break here. Lots more to talk about, lots more people to talk with. Got somebody who wants a clearer idea of what constitutes fasting, for example, what kind of liquids are involved. So we'll talk about that when we get back. You can add your question or comment by sending us an email at midday@wypr.org or phoning us at 410-662-8780. We're going to continue our conversation about intermittent fasting after a real quick break. I'm Sheila Cass. Stay with us. Welcome back to Midday, everyone. I'm Sheila Cast. If you're just joining us, we're talking today about what's known as intermittent fasting. It's the practice of alternating periods of fasting with periods of normal eating. There are a variety of different models, ranging from permanently giving up breakfast to not eating at all several days of the week. I'm speaking with Mark Mattson of the National Institute on Aging. He's also a neuroscience professor at Johns Hopkins University. And Steve Mount, who has been practicing intermittent fasting for a dozen years. If you'd like to call us, our number is 410-662-8780, and our email address is midday@wypr.org. As I said, we got an email from Mary Jo, who wants to know what constitutes fasting, what liquids are permitted, any solids at all. Thanks for the clarification. And we also have, let me pair that with a phone call from John in Darlington. John, welcome to Midday. John?
Yes, hello.
Welcome to Midday. You're on the air.
Thank you. It is my understanding that when you are no longer burning glucose and your muscles not using glucose, et cetera, it is true that you can start burning fat. But I also understand that you also might start burning or metabolizing protein. I was just wondering to what extent this actually happens and if this is any real concern.
Thank you for the question, John. I'm going to throw that at you, Mark Mattson.
Yeah, in the types of short-term fasting that we're talking about, there's really no concerns about breaking down muscle. Protein is one of the last things to be utilized as an energy source. You know, first it's glucose, glycogen, then fat. And so if you're just fasting for 24 hours, even more than that, you're not going to be breaking down muscle. And in fact, in the studies we did that I mentioned, in the human subjects who are fasting two consecutive days a week, they retained their lean mass and selectively had a reduction in their belly fat. So the bottom line is you pretty much have to deplete your fat stores before you start breaking down muscle. And in these short fasts we're talking about, it's not a concern.
Frank wrote us with this query. What about the statement I heard from the president of the American Cardiology Association that eating automatically triggers the immune system and therefore it's better to eat several smaller meals a day rather than one large one? I think a lot of people, Mark Mattson has a very skeptical expression on his face. I don't know exactly what the president of the American Cardiology Association, said. But that idea of grazing being a healthy approach to food, lots of small meals, is something that has been talked about a lot.
Well, I think if you're actually grazing on plant materials, maybe it's probably pretty healthy. But if you're grazing on hamburger and fries, it's not. But the recommendations for eating a lot of small meals, I think my understanding is it really developed from patients with diabetes and the notion, without really a lot of evidence, that it's bad to have big elevations in glucose levels. You know, eat a big meal, then you get a big spike in glucose and insulin. And so the idea was, if you eat a lot of small meals, then you don't have the big spike in glucose, which is true. But on the other hand, when you eat a lot of frequent meals, you're not increasing your insulin sensitivity. So it's actually, from a standpoint of glucose regulation, better to have a fasting period.
A long period of not putting any...
And I also want to mention, we really didn't answer the one question about what constitutes fasting.
That's right.
And so I would define it as going 16 hours or more, 16, 24, 36, with no calorie intake, but keeping hydrated. So you can drink tea, coffee, which essentially have no calories, water, but no calorie intake.
No calorie at all.
Right.
So I do drink coffee. I should say that the 5-2 diet allows, I think it's 500 calories a day. I personally have a latte most days, even if I'm fasting. I started out, I would get an espresso on the fast days and lattes on the other days, but the people kept, giving me a latte because I'm the latte guy. So I decided it was easier to just allow myself that. And I think the real issue is to avoid the sugar spikes. So I never eat anything that is going to give rise to a rapid increase in blood sugar.
That I'm glad you raised that. That was another question from a caller who could not stay with us, was what kind of food when you do eat?
Well, eat healthy. Fruits, vegetables, lean meats, nuts, whole grains, maybe, beans, those kinds of things.
One thing I like to point out is that one thing about intermittent fasting is it really doesn't imply anything about what you eat when you're not fasting. So you can pair intermittent fasting with any diet you like. Because I'm interested in the sort of science behind it, which in animal studies has a lot to do with insulin, try to avoid anything that's going to cause rapid increases in blood sugar. I very much try to avoid
simple sugars.
Simple sugars. In fact, I have what I call the fiber factor. I look at the nutrition label and I compare the percent of the fiber for the day, recommended for the day, and the percent of total carbohydrates, and I want that to be over 1 and hopefully closer to 2, and that's a very useful number.
But that careful attention to that is not inherent in
right.
a fasting, an intermittent fasting
right.
regime.
Right.
Blair wrote us, I've been practicing intermittent fasting for the last month or so. I've been pleasantly surprised to find I'm actually better at eating nothing at all than I am at eating moderately. I have found that if I eat anything during the day, my fast is much more difficult. Once I start eating, it's very difficult to stop. Steve, you're nodding. Does that match your experience?
I'm not so sure it's true for me that if I eat a little bit, then I can't stop. But it's certainly easier to just have a rule where you don't eat than to, eat one cookie but not two. I mean, that kind of a diet would be very hard for me. It would require more willpower than simply not eating on Tuesday, which is very easy to follow.
Laura is calling us from Baltimore. Laura, welcome to Midday.
Yes. I happen to be a person who is somewhat underweight, and so I tend to get a little bit, lightheaded in between even eating meals. I'm just wondering if your guests can still recommend this diet. And so I'm concerned, that my body would maybe break down its protein reserves, sort of catabolize if I followed this.
And Laura, just for clarification, right now you pretty much eat 3 meals a day?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you for the question. Who wants to address it?
Let me say that when I started fasting, I became much less sensitive to not eating. So this lightheadedness, sort of irritability, the sort of short-term hunger that most people get when they don't eat for several hours, that just disappeared. And I think it's an adaptation of the body that's induced by fasting. And so it's possible, and I'm sure everybody's different, but it's possible that for her, intermittent fasting would actually improve the situation. Of course, if she's worried about being too light, she might want to make sure she eats heartily on the days when she's eating.
I was going to say, I mean, if you're blocking off long periods of time when you're not eating anything, it must be hard to actually keep calories up. And both of my guests are nodding sagely. And Matt,
no,
Mark is looking like he doesn't really believe that.
Not for me. My body weight hasn't varied by more than 2 pounds in the last 30 years. But I have some genetics behind that. My dad was skinny, and my son and daughter are skinny. And so the point of what groups of people this might benefit, all we can say from the human studies is it's very likely it will benefit people who are overweight. People who are underweight, like the previous caller, there's no data, and so I can't make any recommendations at all except, people who are overweight, if they can stick with this kind of diet, will probably benefit.
Elizabeth has written us from Baltimore. Would it be helpful to someone who fears being too hungry, at least as one gets used to fasting, to start with eliminating one meal rather than two on the fasting days? Or is cold turkey likely to be easier? Steve?
I'm thinking...
You're grimacing.
Well, since my response was... what I observed was that after I started fasting, it became easier. She might get to that point faster if she just does the whole thing, 24-hour fast, try for a couple weeks, and if it works, then it'll be easier.
Mindy has called us from Baltimore. Mindy, we're short on time. Can you make a quick comment?
Yes, hi. Yes, Dr. Kevin Chen at the University of Maryland School of Medicine, the Center for Integrative Medicine, there's a 4-day Qigong water fast. There's actually one starting tomorrow night, and then he does it again in September. I had the privilege of taking part in it 2 years ago, and it's an amazing opportunity to detox the body. And there's all the Qigong exercises that go along with it. And it's really an amazing opportunity for people who want a supervised fast and to learn some Qigong exercises and work with someone who's, excuse me, who is affiliated with a major medical organization. And, my allergy, I had, no seasonal allergies that year after I did the fast, which was kind of cool.
Mindy, thanks for the call. Mindy's talking about pretty intense if it's 4 days, but it's a one-time thing. How does that differ from what we've been talking about? I mean, we're talking about sort of a way of life. Are there health benefits from an intense short fast?
During those 4 days, many of the same changes that we talked about that are occurring with shorter fasts are occurring for an extended time period and probably to a greater degree. So she mentioned allergies. So during 4 days, there's probably greater reduction in inflammation than you'd get with shorter fasts. But then if you're only doing it a couple times a year, you have to think, well, that may not have as big of an effect for the whole year as, doing like what Steve's doing, 3 days a week.
There is research. There's someone named Walter Longo who's at USC who's been studying less frequent, more, I think he does 3 days or a 5-day nearly fasting. Of course, the issue is that anything like that, you really have to have supervised. You should not try that at home. So she has this guy at University of Maryland who's going to be helping people.
But, supervised. Steve, you mentioned a few minutes ago that somebody who's taking insulin should not try a fast. Mark, Are there other people who should just rule this out? Are there risks and or dangers that we should make people aware of?
Well, I think children, pregnant women, elderly people who are becoming frail, and often very old people mm-hmm. have trouble maintaining body weight in the beginning. And then, we just don't know about other populations with particular disorders. But for people with diabetes and people who are overweight and probably people with inflammatory conditions, which are very common, they will very likely benefit.
I also remember now I read something that people with eating disorders should probably steer clear of this.
Well, anorexia, certainly, which is a psychiatric obsessive compulsive type disorder.
Quick question from Liz in Baltimore. Mike, should men and women fast for different lengths of time during the day during this style of intermittent fasting?
Don't know.
I think everybody has to find what works for them. And,
Is there... People are so interested in how, the health benefits, how long do they last if you stop fasting? I mean,
a good question. In animals, for example, we looked at the cardiovascular system in rats, and we found that alternate day fasting over a period of several weeks will lower their resting heart rate and blood pressure and improve their cardiac, cardiovascular stress resistance. But then when we put them back on the ad lib diet where they can eat as much as they want every day, within 2 weeks, their blood pressure went back up, their resting
really?
Heart rate. Yeah, so it's not, if you go back
you can't
to...
You can't bank these gains.
No, but you've probably benefited from the gain during the time period you did it. For example, like if you've exercised from when you're 20 to 50, but then stop exercising, you have accrued a benefit
sure.
from doing that exercise during that time period.
In the last half minute or so we have, Steve, as a practitioner of this, is there a tip or tips you want to share with people if they're thinking of adjusting to this?
Be flexible and see what works for you. That would be my...
Be flexible and see what works for you. This has been fascinating. I really want to thank you both for giving us some insight into intermittent fasting and why it works, how it works.
Okay, thanks, Sheila.
Mark Mattson is chief of the Laboratory of Neurosciences at the National Institute on Aging and a neuroscience professor at Johns Hopkins University. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
And Steve Mount, a molecular geneticist at the University of Maryland who practices intermittent fasting. Thank you.
Thank you.
And I want to thank you, our listeners, for taking part in this show. We hope, by the way, guys, that it's time for you to break your fast because lunch for our midday guest was provided by Dangerously Delicious Pies, locations at 2839 O'Donnell Street on the Square in Canton and 810 West 36th Street in Hamden. Their menu includes a variety of homemade sweet and savory pies and quiches. Tune in tomorrow for an hour on the Conowingo Dam on the Susquehanna River. Environmentalists fear that legislation could take away the state's power to hold dam operators accountable. We'll look at that tomorrow. I'm Sheila Cass. Stay tuned now for Here and Now.